poor Sister Moore. When we heard that she was dead, my husband felt terrible. We both felt as though a dear mother, for whose society our very hearts yearned, was no more. Some may say, if we had stood in the place of those who knew something of this sister's wishes and wants, we would not have done as they did. I hope you will never have to suffer the stings of conscience, which some must feel who were so interested in their own affairs as to be unwilling to bear any responsibility in her case. May God pity those who are so afraid of deception as to neglect a worthy, self-sacrificing servant of Christ. The remark was made as an excuse for this neglect. We have been bitten so many times that we are afraid of strangers. Did our Lord and his disciples instruct us to be very cautious and not entertain strangers, lest we should possibly make some mistake and get bitten by having the trouble of caring for an unworthy person? Paul exhorts the Hebrews, "Let brotherly love continue." Do not flatter yourselves that there is a time when this exhortation will not be needed, when brotherly love may cease. He continues, "Be not forgetful to entertain strangers, for thereby some have entertained angels unawares." Please read Matthew 25, verse 31, and onward. Read it, brethren, the next time you take the Bible at your morning or evening family devotions. The good works performed by those who are to be welcomed to the kingdom were done to Christ in the person of his suffering people. Those who had done these good works did not see that they had done anything for Christ. They had done no more than their duty to suffering humanity. Those on the left hand could not see that they had abused Christ in neglecting the wants of his people, but they had neglected to do for Jesus in the person of his saints, and for this neglect they were to go away into everlasting punishment. And one definite point of their neglect is thus stated, "I was a stranger, and ye took me not in." These things do not belong alone to Battle Creek. I am grieved at the selfishness among professed Sabbath keepers everywhere. Christ has gone to prepare eternal mansions for us, and shall we refuse him a home for only a few days in the person of his saints who are cast out? He left his home in glory, his majesty and high command, to save lost man. He became poor that we, through his poverty, might become rich. He submitted to insult that man might be exalted, and provided a home that would be matchless for loveliness and enduring as the throne of God. Those who finally overcome and sit down with Christ upon his throne will follow the example of Jesus, and from a willing, happy choice will sacrifice for him in the person of his saints. Those who cannot do this from choice will go away into everlasting punishment.
Chapter 7. Healthful Cookery.
During the last 7 months, we have been at home but about 4 weeks. In our travels, we have sat at many different tables from Iowa to Maine. Some whom we have visited live up to the best light they have. Others, who have the same opportunities of learning to live healthfully and well, have hardly taken the first steps in reform. They will tell you that they do not know how to cook in this new way. But they are without excuse in this matter of cooking. For in the work, How to Live, are many excellent recipes, and this work is within the reach of all. I do not say that the system of cookery taught in that book is perfect. I may soon furnish a small work more to my mind in some respects. But How to Live teaches cookery almost infinitely in advance of what the traveler will often meet, even among some Seventh-day Adventists. Many do not feel that this is a matter of duty, hence they do not try to prepare food properly. This can be done in a simple, healthful, and easy manner, without the use of lard, butter, or flesh meats. Skill must be united with simplicity. To do this, women must read, and then patiently reduce what they read to practice. Many are suffering because they will not take the trouble to do this. I say to such, it is time for you to rouse your dormant energies and read up. Learn how to cook with simplicity, and yet in a manner to secure the most palatable and healthful food. Because it is wrong to cook merely to please the taste or to suit the appetite, no one should entertain the idea that an impoverished diet is right. Many are debilitated with disease and need a nourishing, plentiful, well-cooked diet. We frequently find graham bread heavy, sour, and but partially baked. This is for want of interest to learn and care to perform the important duty of cook. Sometimes we find gem cakes or soft biscuit, dried, not baked, and other things after the same order. And then cooks will tell you that they can do very well in the old style of cooking, but to tell the truth, their families do not like graham bread, that they would starve to live in this way. I have said to myself, I do not wonder at it. It is your manner of preparing food that makes it so unpalatable. To eat such food would certainly give one the dyspepsia. These poor cooks and those who have to eat their food will gravely tell you that the health reform does not agree with them. The stomach has not power to convert poor, heavy, sour bread into good. But this poor bread will convert a healthy stomach into a diseased one. Those who eat such food know that they are failing in strength. Is there not a cause? Some of these persons call themselves health reformers, but they are not. They do not know how to cook. They prepare cakes, potatoes, and graham bread, but there is the same round with scarcely a variation, and the system is not strengthened. They seem to think the time wasted which is devoted to obtaining a thorough experience in the preparation of healthful, palatable food. Some act as though that which they eat were lost, and anything they could toss into the stomach to fill it would do as well as food prepared with so much painstaking. It is important that we relish the food we eat. If we cannot do this, but eat mechanically, we fail to be nourished and built up as we would be if we could enjoy the food we take into the stomach. We are composed of what we eat. In order to make a good quality of blood, we must have the right kind of food, prepared in a right manner. It is a religious duty for those who cook to learn how to prepare healthful food in different ways, so that it may be eaten with enjoyment. Mothers should teach their children how to cook. What branch of the education of a young lady can be so important as this? The eating has to do with the life. Scanty, impoverished, ill-cooked food is constantly depraving the blood by weakening the blood-making organs. It is highly essential that the art of cookery be considered one of the most important branches of education. There are but few good cooks. Young ladies consider that it is stooping to a menial office to become a cook. This is not the case. They do not view the subject from a right standpoint. Knowledge of how to prepare food healthfully, especially bread, is no mean science. In many families, we find dyspeptics, and frequently the reason of this is the poor bread. The mistress of the house decides that it must not be thrown away, and they eat it. Is this the way to dispose of poor bread? Will you put it into the stomach to be converted into blood? Has the stomach power to make sour bread sweet, heavy bread light, moldy bread fresh. Mothers neglect this branch in the education of their daughters. They take the burden of care and labor and are fast wearing out, while the daughter is excused to visit, to crochet, or study her own pleasure. This is mistaken love, mistaken kindness. The mother is doing an injury to her child, which frequently lasts her lifetime. At the age when she should be capable of bearing some of life's burdens, she is unqualified to do so. Such will not take care and burdens. They go light-loaded, excusing themselves from responsibilities, while the mother is pressed down under her burden of care as a cart beneath sheaves. The daughter does not mean to be unkind, but she is careless and heedless, or she would notice the tired look and mark the expression of pain upon the countenance of the mother, and would seek to do her part to bear the heavier part of the burden and relieve the mother, who must have freedom from care or be brought upon a bit of suffering, and, it may be, of death. Why will mothers be so blind and negligent in the education of their daughters? I have been distressed as I have visited different families to see the mother bearing the heavy burden, while the daughter, who manifested buoyancy of spirit and had a good degree of health and vigor, felt no care, no burden. When there are large gatherings and families are burdened with company, I have seen the mother bearing the burden, with the care of everything upon her, while the daughters are sitting down chatting with young friends, having a social visit. These things seem so wrong to me that I can hardly forbear speaking to the thoughtless youth and telling them to go to work. Release your tired mother. Lead her to a seat in the parlor and urge her to rest and enjoy the society of her friends. But the daughters are not the ones to be blamed wholly in this matter. The mother is at fault. She has not patiently taught her daughters how to cook. She knows that they lack knowledge in the cooking department and therefore feels no release from the labor. She must attend to everything that requires care, thought, and attention. Young ladies should be thoroughly instructed in cooking, whatever be their circumstances in life. Here is knowledge which may be put to a practical use. It is a branch of education which has the most direct influence upon human life, especially the lives of those held most dear. Many a wife and mother who has not had the right education and lacks skill in the cooking department is daily presenting her family with ill-prepared food, which is steadily and surely destroying the digestive organs, making a poor quality of blood, and frequently bringing on acute attacks of inflammatory disease and causing premature death. Many have been brought to their death by eating heavy, sour bread. An instance was related to me of a hired girl who made a batch of sour, heavy bread. In order to get rid of it and conceal the matter, she threw it to a couple of very large hogs. Next morning, the man of the house found his swine dead, and upon examining the trough, found pieces of this heavy bread. He made inquiries, and the girl acknowledged what she had done. She had not a thought of the effect of such bread upon the swine. If heavy, sour bread will kill swine, which can devour rattlesnakes and almost every detestable thing, what effect will it have upon that tender organ, the human stomach? It is a religious duty for every Christian girl and woman to learn at once to make good, sweet, light bread from unbolted wheat flour. Mothers should take their daughters into the kitchen with them when very young and teach them the art of cooking. The mother cannot expect her daughters to understand the mysteries of housekeeping without education. She should instruct them patiently, lovingly, and make the work as agreeable as she can by her cheerful countenance and encouraging words of approval. If they fail once, twice, or thrice, censure not. Already discouragement is doing its work and tempting them to say, "It is of no use, I can't do it." This is not the time for censure. The will is becoming weakened. It needs the spur of encouraging, cheerful, hopeful words as, "Never mind the mistakes you have made. You are but a learner and must expect to make blunders. Try again. Put your mind on what you are doing. Be very careful and you will certainly succeed." Many mothers do not realize the importance of this branch of knowledge, and rather than have the trouble and care of instructing their children and bearing with their failings and errors while learning, they prefer to do it all themselves. And when their daughters make a failure in their efforts, they send them away with, "It is no use, you can't do this or that. You perplex and trouble me more than you help me." Thus, the first efforts of the learners are repulsed, and the first failure so cools their interest and ardor to learn that they dread another trial and will propose to sew, knit, clean house, anything but cook. Here, the mother was greatly at fault. She should have patiently instructed them that they might by practice obtain an experience which would remove the awkwardness and remedy the unskillful movements of the inexperienced worker. Here I will add extracts from testimony number 10, published in 1864. Quote, "Children who have been petted and waited upon always expect it. And if their expectations are not met, they are disappointed and discouraged. This same disposition will be seen through their whole lives. They will be helpless, leaning upon others for aid, expecting others to favor them and yield to them. And if they are opposed, even after they have grown to manhood and womanhood, they think themselves abused. And thus they worry their way through the world, hardly able to bear their own weight, often murmuring and fretting because everything does not suit them. Mistaken parents are teaching their children lessons which will prove ruinous to them, and are also planting thorns for their own feet. They think that by gratifying the wishes of their children and letting them follow their own inclinations, they can gain their love. What an error! Children thus indulged grow up unrestrained in their desires, unyielding in their dispositions, selfish, exacting, and overbearing, a curse to themselves and to all around them. To a great extent, parents hold in their own hands the future happiness of their children. Upon them rests the important work of forming the character of these children. The instructions given in childhood will follow them all through life. Parents sow the seed which will spring up and bear fruit either for good or evil. They can fit their sons and daughters for happiness or for misery. Children should be taught very young to be useful, to help themselves, and to help others. Many daughters of this age can, without remorse of conscience, see their mothers toiling, cooking, washing, or ironing while they sit in the parlor and read stories, knit edging, crochet, or embroider. Their hearts are as unfeeling as a stone. But where does this wrong originate? Who are the ones usually most to blame in this matter? The poor, deceived parents. They overlook the future good of their children, and in their mistaken fondness let them sit in idleness, or do that which is of but little account, which requires no exercise of the mind or muscles, and then excuse their indolent daughters because they are weakly. What has made them weakly? In many cases, it has been the wrong course of the parents. A proper amount of exercise about the house would improve both mind and body. But children are deprived of this through false ideas until they are averse to work. It is disagreeable and does not accord with their ideas of genteelity. It is thought to be unladylike and even coarse to wash dishes, iron, or stand over the washtub. This is the fashionable instruction which is given children in this unfortunate age. God's people should be governed by higher principles than worldlings who seek to gauge all their course of action according to fashion. God-fearing parents should train their children for a life of usefulness, prepare them to bear burdens while young. If your children have been unaccustomed to labor, they will soon become weary. They will complain of side ache, pain in the shoulders, and tired limbs, and you will be in danger through sympathy of doing the work yourselves rather than have them suffer a little. Let the burden upon the children be very light at first, and then increase it a little every day until they can do a proper amount of labor without becoming so weary. Inactivity is the greatest cause of side ache and shoulder ache among children. Mothers should take their daughters with them into the kitchen and patiently educate them. Their constitution will be better for such labor. Their muscles will gain tone and strength, and their meditations will become more healthy and elevated at the close of the day. They may be weary, but how sweet is rest after a proper amount of labor. Sleep, nature's sweet restorer, invigorates the weary body and prepares it for the next day's duties. Do not intimate to your children that it is no matter whether they labor or not. Teach them that their help is needed, that their time is of value, and that you depend on their labor. Unquote.
Chapter 8. Books and Tracts.
The proper circulation and distribution of our publications is one of the most important branches of the present work, but little can be done without this, and our ministers can do more in this work than any other class of persons. It is true that a few years ago many of our preachers were carrying the matter of the sale of books too far. Some of them added to the stock which they held for sale not only publications of little real value, but also articles of merchandise equally valueless. But some of our ministers now take an extreme view of what I said in testimony number 11 upon the sale of our publications. One in the state of New York, upon whom the burdens of labor do not rest heavily, who had acted as agent, holding a good assortment of publications, decided to sell no more, and wrote to the office stating that the publications were subject to their order. This is wrong. Here I will give an extract from testimony number 11. Quote, "The burden of selling our publications should not rest upon ministers who labor in word and doctrine. Their time and strength should be held in reserve, that their efforts may be thorough in a series of meetings. Their time and strength should not be drawn upon to sell our books when they can be properly brought before the public by those who have not the burden of preaching the word. In entering new fields, it may be necessary for the minister to take publications with him to offer for sale to the people, and it may be necessary in some other circumstances also to sell books and transact business for the office of publication. But such work should be avoided whenever it can be done by others." Unquote. The first portion of this extract is qualified by the last part. To be a little more definite, my views of this matter are that such ministers as Elders Andrews, Wagoner, White, and Loughborough, who have the oversight of the work and consequently have an extra amount of care, burden, and labor, should not add to their burdens by the sale of our publications, especially at tent meetings and at general conferences. The view was given to correct those who, at such meetings so far, came down from the dignity of their work as to spread out before the crowd merchandise which had no connection with the work. Our ministers who enjoy a comfortable state of health may, with the greatest propriety, engage at proper times in the sale of our important publications, especially do the sale and circulation of such works as have recently been urged upon the attention of our people claim vigorous efforts for them at this time. In 4 weeks, on our tour in the counties of Gratiot, Saginaw, and Tuscola, my husband sold and gave to the poor $400 worth. He first set the importance of the books before the people. Then they were ready to take them as fast as he, with several to help him, could wait upon them.